My name is Nancy D. I'm a compulsive overeater, 100-pounder. I live in LA, out in California. I get the absolute impression you guys are in a different part of the world than I am. And through the miracle of Zoom, here we are together. And I find that whenever I'm at a meeting, I hear different steps seems louder when it's being read, re reading the steps. And the one that I felt heard louder today was six, which was an interesting. And I'm sure I'll work that in some way. But I've been in the rooms for a while. Ziva said we used to go to the same meeting together for 10 years. So I've been in a multiple decades. It came in the late 1980s, a lifetime ago. And when I came in, I don't exactly know what I weighed. I identify as a 100-pounder. And I weigh more than 100 pounds more than I do then, than I do today. But I don't know exactly what I weighed because I stopped weighing. But I do know it started with a three. And I don't know, 325, 340. I don't know. Like I said, I stopped weighing. But I know what size I wore. And I know what size. There was only one more size in the store available. No matter how much money I had, they only had this much more. The next size that was available was size 28. And there was only about this much selection, just inches of selection in that size. And I remember looking to the right. You know how in a retail environment the sizes are the smaller on the left, and as it gets bigger, it goes to the right. And there was only just inches more available. And I thought, what will I do when I what will I do then? But I was carrying all that extra weight, had a big job in corporate America, and I had in charge of a lot of stuff. And I had a dear friend that was recovering in AA, and we talked all the time. I talked to him every day, and I was just like he was about drinking, I was about muffins. I'm an addict. I'm an addict related to sugar. And I ate sugar every single day of my life without exception. And but I also did all the diets that were popular at the time. I did the Beverly Hills diet. I did the one with the grapefruits and the cottage cheese, or I went on Weight Watchers several times. I did, these are old days. I did like Richard Simmons, if anybody ever remember. You have to be pretty old to know what I'm talking about when I say Richard Simmons. But I did all the diets that were popular, all the ones that had been invented at that time. And what I wanted to do, what I really wanted to do, was join this commune. I'm telling the truth here. That was in Murrieta Hot Springs, and they had a food plan, and you could fast for 30 days. And I thought, that's what I'll do. I'm going to fast for 30 days. Anyway, I did all those things. I didn't join the commune, but I did all those things, and I lost weight every time, including OptiFast, by the way. That was the one where you don't eat anything at all. You take liquid protein, and I didn't eat one drop of solid food, not one, for 6 months. And I lost weight. You don't eat, you lose weight. But then when I began to eat again, I gained it all back, plus the bonus pounds. Anyway, so I come into the rooms in the late 80s, and I'd heard of Overeaters Anonymous because, again, I had the friend recovering in AA. And I remember late at night, back in the late 80s, if you're old enough, you might remember that television used to go off at night. It wasn't 24 hours a day. It used to go off at like 2:30 in the morning. And before it went off, there would be public service announcements. And one of the public service announcements said, Overeaters Anonymous. And I didn't know exactly what that was, but I had heard of it. And so when I came in, you guys were saying, like, a lot of the things I did with food were deep secrets that I was going to take to the grave. Like, I remember that I used to brag to myself that I had the skill that I drove a stick shift car. I drove a stick. I could simultaneously drive a stick, read a Thomas Brothers guide, which at that point was a paper document, it was a book. And eat an ice cream cone simultaneously. I thought that was a skill that I could do all that. Not that thinking that's twisted thinking. And I don't know who among us, if you've were the kind of eater that I was, I had the experience where I'd be driving and forget safety for a moment. If I dropped the peanut or the next bite of the cookie or whatever, I'm leaning over trying to get up, not paying so much attention to being safe with my driving. So anyway, I came in and you guys were talking right out loud about things that I didn't talk to anybody else about. You were talking about the food and the way you ate, and there was laughter in the rooms, and I understood what you were talking about. And sometimes I would hear you, it happened all the time. You would say something that explained me.
Five, Nancy.
Oh my gosh. Oh, okay, thanks, Deba. That explained me to me that I didn't understand. You were so articulate about how you ate and what you did with your food. I remember hearing somebody say that they were a garbage can eater, and I thought, oh, and I thought that meant they went out behind the house and dove into the public trash can and got the food out and ate it again. I thought I never did that. And then I heard somebody say they were a garbage can eater. They threw something away in the kitchen trash and then they went out and got they dug in and got it out again. And I was like, oh, because I'd done that. And I but I'd never heard anybody talk about that. And I'd never told anybody else about that. So I came in and you guys were talking my language. And I remember too coming in the meeting rooms. This was way before Zoom. So I had to physically, go to the meeting rooms. And there were lots of things with numbers hanging on the wall. I didn't know then. It was the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. There was lots of things with numbers. And a couple of those things I didn't want any part of. I didn't know what it was particularly, but you guys were talking about, well, there's one of those numbers, step four, step five. I didn't want any part of that because that sounded like eek, to admit to somebody what I had done and to tell somebody the truth. It was a scary thing indeed. But I heard you say get a sponsor. Ask someone who has what you want what they're doing to get it. And so I was on a mission to find somebody that had what I wanted so that I could ask them. But I told you I had a big job, corporate America, and I was not accustomed to asking for help. And so I found that to be very difficult. I was afraid of it. And if you had asked me before I came in the rooms if I was afraid, I didn't think I was afraid because I didn't feel the fear because what was I doing? I was, piling food upon it. So I didn't feel fear. But when I came in and you said, ask somebody that has what you want, they'll help you. I was afraid to do it. And I told somebody after a meeting that I was afraid to do that. And she said, well, how about if you write it on a piece of paper, will you be my sponsor? And you keep it in your pocket. And when you see somebody that has what you want, you can hand them the paper. And I said, okay, I'll try that. And I wrote, will you be my sponsor? And I was carrying it around. I get sweaty palms just talking about that because the feelings were real for me about this. And one day I saw somebody and she had what I wanted and I got so excited I forgot to hand her the paper, but I did ask her would she be my sponsor, and she said yes, and she got me started me on the steps. First thing she asked me to do before she actually had me working the steps was 30 and 30, 30 meetings in 30 days, not on Zoom. So I had to get in the car and drive to 30 meetings 30 days in a row, which meant I had to tell my family. If I was going to do something every day, they were certainly going to see this, notice this. And I had a kid, I had a young child, daughter, and so I needed babysitting. And okay, but I began to do it. I began to go to the meetings because it was a condition to work with her. She said, "If you want to work with me, the first thing I'm going to ask you to do is 30 and 30." And I did do 30 and 30. If I had to point to something that changed my life, that would be one of the first things I pointed to, 30 and 30, because I heard you. I heard what you said, and I heard you repeat the steps. I didn't try to memorize the steps, but I heard them repeatedly. And they became familiar to me. I heard you say things like, you know what, at the end of every meeting, you were holding hands, which like creeped me out. I have to say that for a while, but you did say, keep coming back. And I didn't understand the things with the numbers, no, but I heard you say keep coming back, and I could do that. And I did. And I still do, by the way. If you told me then that all these decades later I'd still be here, I just would have thought you were mistaken because I didn't know I was coming into a way that would change my life. I came in to lose weight. I just didn't want to weigh 300 plus pounds anymore. I wasn't thinking I needed a whole life thing because I can't say that I thought of myself as successful, but because I was functioning and functioning well, I'll tell you a little secret. I'd been in the rooms for a while. Now I wasn't brand new, but I'd been in the rooms for a while, and I railed against a little bit of step one because I didn't think my life was unmanageable. I thought I was managing pretty gosh darn well, and I was wrong about that. But I kept that to myself, and one day I was talking with a friend well, I wouldn't say she was a friend, but she had a lot of recovery and I respected her. And I told her the secret that when it says, step one, I'm powerless over food, my life had become unmanageable, that unmanageable part, I really felt like I wasn't telling the truth about that. And she said, this was Nanette, if anybody knows a Nanette. She said, well, how about if you flip it? She said, how about if you say, I'm powerless over life and my food has become unmanageable? And I said, yes, that I could do because I am powerless over life. And gosh darn, my food had become unmanageable. And then I didn't have a secret I was keeping about step one anymore. And there was freedom in that, telling the truth. And so, okay, how am I on time, Ziva? That 10 in the middle, how much of that do I have left?
You have five more in the middle and then five more.
Okay. So I'm talking about what happened. So I come in the rooms, my sponsor gets me going on the steps. I begin to tell the truth, and things start to change. Gosh darn, the weight begins to come off and things begin to change. And I'm learning from you. Oh, another thing my sponsor had me do, 30 and 30, yes, begin to work the steps, yes, and have service commitments. She suggested, she said, I want you to find the number, the meeting, the number of meetings per week to go to that is right for you. You know, do you need to go to one meeting a week? Do you need to go to five meetings? You know, find the number that's right for you. I found it was three, and I needed to have service commitments. She said, you have to have keep two service commitments because guess what? That gets you to two meetings. Okay. And so I did those things. And I began to know people and they began to know me. And when things started to happen, I heard how you dealt with things. Like there was this woman that used to say, she said it all the time. There are a couple of them that said it actually. They said, you don't gotta wanna, meaning you don't have to want to do the thing to do the thing. You don't have to want to. And I had installed, I didn't know this, but I had installed wanting to as a prerequisite to doing something. I would wait around for me wanting to do it. I thought this is what I was supposed to do. You know, I don't want to, so I'm not going to do it. Well, that doesn't work. And so I would hear these women, they're older women, and they would say, you don't gotta wanna, you don't gotta. And I would use that. I still use that, by the way. You know, I'm laying on the floor doing exercise, got my leg up in the air. I don't gotta wanna. You know, I have to want to exercise. Like my body's going to respond raising the leg, whether I want to while I'm doing it or not. And I got that here. Or And what I was trying to tell you about right there was I would hear what you said and use those in the moment in my life. Like I would the idea of pause, that there I used to think that if I wanted to eat desperately, that I could, because of all those times I said no to eating when I wanted to eat, but I wasn't desperate yet. So I thought when I was desperate that I really could eat. And I heard you guys talking about pause, that when the yearning is there, not just that, not just the desire, but that deep yearn, when I felt that I if I paused, and that I used to think those two things were connected, the desire to eat and eating. I thought they were one. I didn't realize there was actually could be a space. You guys think I'm kidding. There actually can be space, and in fact, there can be quite a bit of space in between. But I got that pause idea from you and the tools. And the tools have made all the difference. Like meetings, for example. My default setting, when I didn't know quite what to do with myself, I'd go to a meeting. I happen to live in a city. There's lots of meetings that I could go, you know, not often. And I started to do that. And or another one, I'm a big fan of the tool of literature. Because I can't always pick up the phone and make a call. I don't know what to say. What should I say? It's not that big a deal. It keeps me from picking up the phone, but I can open the book. And so another thing my sponsor told me to do is when you hear somebody call out, these were the old days, when you hear somebody call out a page number of in the big book, make a note and then go home and see what they're talking about. And so I remember hearing people talk about the jaywalker. Page 37 in the big book. And I thought, and I didn't know quite what they were talking about, but I'd heard it several times, the jaywalker. And when I first came in the rooms, there wasn't as much OA literature available yet. It had not been written. And so we relied more heavily on AA literature. And so the big book, and I still do, the big book of AA and the AA 12 and 12. But I did not relate to this big book right off the bat. I got to tell you, I didn't. And I felt wrong for not relating, but meanwhile, I didn't relate. And then I heard somebody talking about the Jaywalker, and my sponsor has said, when they say a page number, go look it up. Does anybody not know what I'm talking about when I say the Jaywalker? Okay, well, the Jaywalkers, thank you for saying that, Ed. The Jaywalkers on page 37 of the Big Book. And the Big Book, and he's talking in the story of the Big Book, page 37, about this guy who has a thing for jaywalking. And he
And see
likes to.
five more.
Okay, oh, see,
Five more.
I get nervous. I don't think, how am I going to talk for 20 minutes and to get going on this stuff? I get so excited about how you guys have changed me. So this Big Book reading talks about a guy who has a thing for jaywalking, meaning he dashes out in front of cars. He doesn't cross at the crosswalk. He just dashes out, and he does it repeatedly, and he gets hit, and he gets hit repeatedly. He gets hit, and he gets injured badly. He breaks his back. And breaks his arm too late. I mean, he's injured repeatedly. And he says, I'm going to stop jaywalking. I swear I'm going to stop jaywalking. And he gets injured so badly he can't work anymore. He's held up to ridicule. And he promises his wife, I swear I'm not going to jaywalk anymore. Gets out of the hospital, dashes out in front, and gets hit by a fire truck. And he's terribly injured. And he really does promise and intend to not jaywalk anymore. And I'm reading this years ago, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. And the very next line in the Big Book says, you might think this example is ridiculous, but if you substituted eating sugar, it says drinking alcohol, for jaywalking, the example would fit exactly. And that's how I knew I was in the right place, is because I am just like that jaywalker. I promised I wouldn't eat anymore. I swore to, I'd fall asleep at night swearing I wouldn't do it the next day. I go to programs and like medical programs and get shots and do all these different things. But I couldn't stop. And I was as ridiculous as he was. I was about eating sugar. But I come in the rooms and you guys are talking. You're talking about doing things a different way. And I get a sponsor. Oh, I'm at the part where I'm supposed to talk about what it's like now. Okay, I forgot Ziva's timing. Okay, so let me talk about what I do now. I still do the things I used to do. I go to meetings. I probably go to about maybe I was counting earlier. I think I go to five OA meetings a week, a few in person and several on Zoom. And I'm in another fellowship. I discovered in my journey that I needed another fellowship, and I go to meetings in that fellowship as well. But I still use the literature. I get up every morning and I meditate and I pray. I talk to God. I got my relationship with my higher power in these rooms because I knew I was supposed to pray. But I didn't have prayer as part of my daily life, and I certainly didn't want to do it wrong. So I wasn't doing it. And so I heard, because I knew I could pray this. I heard people pray with their arms up. People talked about praying prone, but I didn't know what to say. And I heard a guy in the rooms one day say he prayed in the car. And I thought, prayed in the car. And he said his relationship with his higher power was like warm and casual. And that appealed to me. And so he said he prayed, Hi God, it's me, Nancy. I mean, he said his name. He didn't say Nancy. And so I started to pray in the car, so which I didn't have to worry about what to do with my hands because I was driving. And I had rules, like I couldn't turn on the radio until I had prayed. And so, Hi God, it's me, Nancy, with my hands on the wheel. And that is how I connected with my higher power. It was warm, it was casual, and I learned to do that in these rooms. And I talk to God all the time now. And I don't even necessarily always think of it as prayer. I think of it as checking in with my higher power. I was trying to think of how I could connect with my higher power more often in my day, and I made this little practice thing for myself. How about if you, talking to myself, Nance, how about if you pray when you come to a stop sign? And I thought, I like that. And so now, when I go to a stop sign, it's just maybe a moment. I just think God, I don't like going into big detail necessarily, but I said that to say that I'm in contact with God all the time. And you guys know, the expression, don't say it out loud, but the expression WTF. You know what that stands for? What the? think about that for a second. When you're saying that to yourself, what the? Who are you talking to? You're talking to God. And when I realized that when I say, whoa, or say whatever, those kind of expressions, that I'm actually talking to my higher power, then I began to have more of a dialogue. And I'll narrate from my higher power. I say, are you looking at this? Are you seeing what's happening? What am I supposed to do with this? I'm talking to God when I do that. I mean, it's prayer. So I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. My sponsor has a sponsor. I use the literature a lot. I go to meetings. I do service. I listen, keep my mouth shut. I use the tools. And I do this every day, and it's changed my life. I've been through some tough stuff in this program, but I use program to get me through that tough stuff. COVID, that was a heck of a thing, wasn't it? Before that, my daughter died. I mean, what are you supposed to do with that? But I went through it.
I'm Nancy.
Thanks. I went through it with program and my higher power, and it made all the difference. And I love this program. I get so excited when I get started talking about it. Thanks for listening.